The Second Amendment is just 27 words. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The entire provision took up one line in the original Bill of Rights. In the 230 years since its ratification, however, that amendment has sparked millions upon millions of pages of social commentary, judicial opinion, and legislation, local, state, and federal. Hi, I'm John Tuanis, and over the next half hour, we'll devote several thousand more words to an examination of how the Second Amendment is playing out in the General Assembly's 2022 session. Don't go away. Indiana lawmakers, from the State House to your house. As I noted at the top of the show, the 27 words that make up the Second Amendment have yielded millions upon millions of pages of impassioned, often conflicting prose. At the moment, much of the rhetorical clash at the State House is focused on a 34-page bill that would allow most adults to carry a handgun without a permit. Supporters call it constitutional, lawful, or permitless carry. Critics call it a formula for escalating violence. Now, whether or not the measure becomes law this session, the debate is sure to continue. Joining me to discuss the issue are Republican Representative Jim Lucas of Seymour, Democratic Representative Robin Shackelford of Indianapolis, attorney, author, and firearms instructor Guy Relford, founder of the Pro Gun 2A Project and host of The Gun Guy on WIBC Radio here in Indianapolis, and former three-term Fort Wayne Mayor Paul Helmke, who served as president and CEO of the Brady Campaign to Prevent Handgun Violence, or Gun Violence, not Handgun Violence, before joining the faculty of Indiana University, where he is a professor of practice in the O'Neill School of Public and Environmental Affairs. Thank you all for being here for this discussion. Jim Lucas, let me start with you. You're a co-author of the bill in question, House Bill 1077. You say Second Amendment, simple concept, should be simple for everybody to grasp and enforce and live and abide by. Why then does it take 34 pages to explain what you're trying to do in the bill?
What a perfect segue, John. Thank you. I appreciate that. That just simply shows how far away we have gotten from the constitutional protections that every individual enjoys in America. 34 pages is basically deleting existing code to get us back where we need to be of the Second Amendment, not just that, but Article 1, Section 32 of the Indiana State Constitution, which is even more simpler than the Second Amendment, which reads, "The people shall have a right to bear arms for defense of themselves and the state." And nowhere in the Constitution do we license any other right. This is unique in the fact that somehow we have tolerated for this long the licensing of a constitutional right. And it's just, you know, it's going to take that much deletion of existing code to get us back to where we need to be.
And your bill, and again, we'll try to condense 34 pages, basically any adult who isn't a convicted felon or doesn't have some sort of mental health, documented mental health issue, is permitted to carry a gun without a license. Is that pretty much the long and short of it?
Not permitted. The government doesn't grant permission on existing on constitutional rights. It recognizes
the
Constitution. The Constitution prohibits government from infringing those rights, and that's basically what we're going back to. People that are currently prohibited from carrying still will not be able to lawfully carry a handgun moving forward. And you know, there's been so much disinformation put out against this one topic, not just this year, but for decades on end, that we are finally at a point where I think we can right decades of wrong.
Robin Shackelford, what do you think?
So I understand a constitutional amendment, but unfortunately we have about 10 exceptions of people in state law that cannot carry a handgun. And because we have those exceptions, law enforcement need to have a way to identify who should be able to carry a handgun, who should not be able to carry one. And we know that 90% of Hoosiers are for background checks for someone to have a handgun. I think it just makes common sense that we have some kind of process to know who those handguns should be in their hands and who should not.
Now, wouldn't the purchase, though, still remain the same? And I mean, you'd still have to sign the forms with the ATF. You'd still, where there are background checks required, those would still take place. When it comes to purchasing, this is more about carrying, or am I misunderstanding?
Yeah, this is more for the license to carry. And so I will remind people that last year, we prevented about 10,000 people that should not have gotten a license through that process from getting a license.
Would this be more palatable if there were more groups on that exemption list?
Well, I think if you got one person on that list, whether if it's felonies or domestic violence or two people, you still need a way to identify who are those people. I say it's the same as driver's license. We put people through pre-driving. We make them get a driver's license, and law enforcement uses those licenses to identify if you have a suspended license, if you're current. So it's the same kind of process. We need to have some kind of way to identify who should be carrying or who should be driving or not driving.
Guy Relford, you, I'm guessing you drive, and I know you're also a certified firearms instructor. You obviously are offering that as a service. I think you have your own chief instructor at your own company. Does that not suggest that people should have some kind of qualifications, if you will, to carry a gun?
Well, I don't believe in putting restrictions and conditions on the exercise of a constitutional freedom. I mean, we don't make somebody take a civics course before they can vote. So I think training is very important. It's the reason I'm a professional trainer in addition to being a lawyer. But I think that's a matter of personal responsibility. And every time we try to legislate personal responsibility, it fails miserably, whether it's drugs or any other area. So I think training is vital, but I don't think it should be a condition. And our current licensing system doesn't have a training requirement. So training doesn't even really enter into the equation when we're talking about constitutional carry. What we're talking about is saying that if you would have passed the background check to get a license, then you can pass the process. You can skip the process. We have to beg the government for permission to please allow you to exercise a constitutional freedom. That's a right you already have. And for decades, I've been saying, somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but it's absolutely true, that a license is simply the process by which you buy back from the government a right you already had. And here we're going to say, no, if someone has that right, they don't have to go get permission to exercise it. And there are means today. There are existing criminal history databases that have all the information on who's a prohibited possessor and who's not. And that could be as simple as a radio call from a police car on the side of the road back to dispatch, back to the station, to someone who has access to those databases, and all that information is available. So if you would not get a license today, whether it's because you have a felony conviction or whether it's because you have a domestic battery conviction, even as a misdemeanor, you have a domestic battery, a domestic violence order of protection against you, you can't avail yourself of constitutional carry under this bill. You get caught with a gun, you go to jail, just like you do now. So this really only affects law-abiding citizens because, oh, by the way, criminals don't care about the licensing system anyway. Ask any cop or any prosecutor, Do bad guys care whether they have a license or not before they carry a handgun? And they will laugh at you and say, of course not.
Makes sense. If you've heard the argument here, you've heard this in many states around the country. Weigh in here. I mean, what should cut through this and tell us what Hoosiers should make of this debate?
I mean, there's so many issues here and so many concerns that I have with some of the statements that have been made already. First of all, I came to this issue when I was mayor of Fort Wayne. I came to this issue as a law and order issue. We were having an increase in crime in the late 80s, early 90s in Fort Wayne and many cities around the state. And I wanted to do what I could to try to reduce the violence. And in addition to adding police officers and working with the community, neighborhood communities, faith-based communities, I realized how weak the gun laws were in our country. And, you know, what doesn't make sense to me is why we want to do something that our law enforcement officers, law enforcement leaders for the most part oppose, that they feel is going to make us more dangerous. Why we want to do something that is going to allow more people and encourage more people to carry loaded guns in public without any training, without any checks and balances on them. You know, if Guy is correct that this isn't going to affect what bad guys are going to do, and if this isn't going to affect the person that qualifies currently to carry a gun, what is this doing? Why do we need this 34-page piece of legislation? What it's going to do, it's going to encourage more people that might have a gun at home for self-defense. And when it's a gun at home for self-defense, it's only basically putting the family at that home and those who would try to enter that home at risk. They're encouraging them to take that gun out with them, to take that gun loaded on the streets without knowing what they're doing. There was a situation in Houston, Texas the other night. Somebody was taking money out of an ATM. They must have been concerned. They had their gun with them. They got held up at gunpoint. And of course, since the other person got the jump on them, their gun didn't do any good until that person ran away and they took shots at him and they killed a 9-year-old girl who was not involved with that at all. You know, when somebody is carrying that loaded gun in public, it puts us all at risk unless we've had some criteria to make sure they know what they're doing. Let me say one other thing. I was in that building that's in Guy's background 14 years ago when Justice Scalia announced the decision in the D.C. versus Heller case. That was the first time that the U.S. Supreme Court said that the Second Amendment applied to an individual right and not a militia-related, not a communal right. And Justice Scalia, when he spoke from the bench that day, and again, the late Justice Scalia, no screaming liberal by any means, said that like most rights, the right secured by the Second Amendment is not unlimited. You know, we don't allow people to have protests any place, any time. We have time, manner, and place restrictions. You can't just march down the middle of the street with a protest or into the state house with your protest and not face some consequences. We do have limits on free speech. You can't yell fire in the crowded theater. But Justice Scalia went on to say, from Blackstone through the 19th century cases, commentators and courts routinely explained that the right was not a right to keep and carry any weapon whatsoever in any manner whatsoever and for whatever purpose. We have always had restrictions on other constitutional rights. We should have restrictions on this right. And in that case, the remedy that Dick Heller got was a license from the Washington, D.C. I'd feel a lot safer. I think our police would feel a lot safer. I think our public would feel a lot safer if they had some sense that not just everybody can carry a loaded gun in public, any place, anytime, something that puts us all at risk.
Yeah, Jim Lucas, let me ask this. You know, Paul Helmke says he came to this for practical reasons, his views during his time as mayor because of a crime problem. And we've seen recent data, and I guess it's from ostensibly nonpartisan groups that say that there is a correlation between a relaxation of gun control statutes and crime, violent crime in particular. This is just out in the past couple of weeks. We've seen some of the data. Even if that were the case, would that sway your opinion? Another way to phrase this, is this philosophical or pragmatic or practical in your eyes? Even if it were documented that the current practice reduces crime vis-a-vis an easing of the restriction, would that sway you at all?
Absolutely not. I mean, this isn't a philosophical or ideological conversation. This is a right or wrong. Read the Constitution. You know, Scalia, while he was a brilliant legal mind, Scalia was human. You know, Scalia wasn't God. Every elected official, every attorney, every police officer is required to swear an oath to uphold and support the Constitution. The Constitution is plainly written for a reason. Go back and read the preamble to the Bill of Rights, and it breaks it down so crystal clear that to argue against it just shows either an ignorance of what somebody is trying to argue against or a level of disingenuousness as to make their argument just laughable right on its face. But, you know, for these rights, Mr. Helmke brought up a very good point there. About licensing, you know, several years ago, I did an experiment where I took the exact same language that the state of Indiana uses to license our Second Amendment rights, and I applied it to professional journalists. Exact same language. The nation went nuts. They said, you can't do that. That's unconstitutional. I said, why not? And they said, well, journalists have First Amendment protections. And this is the simplicity of the argument, John. When it come down, I said, well, I use the exact same language that everybody accepts to license a Second Amendment right. How can it not be applicable to a First Amendment right? Nobody could answer that. So to say that our rights have limits, tell me what those limits are on all the other rights, and then we can have a conversation.
Robin Shackelford, should this debate unfold over, you know, what the Constitution says, you know, where the commas are and where they're not, or is it just a matter of looking at practical realities of the 21st century?
So I think you can look at both. I agree with Judge Scalia. This is not an unlimited right. We are talking about public safety. When you're talking about media and someone being able to have free speech, that does not create that imminent danger as someone carrying a gun. So I think we can look at people's rights, but at the same time, we got to be practical about this. We want to keep the nation safe. We want to keep our community safe. So the licensing process is one of those ways to make sure that our community is safe. You can't have this is not a black or white discussion where it's either one way or the other way, where we're following the Constitution or we're not. I think we're embracing the Constitution, and at the same time, we're looking at public safety and making sure that our neighbor is safe, a child is safe. If someone has a handgun in their home, if they're carrying it in their car, we want to make sure that we know that the 10 criteria people that we have listed are not carrying handguns. How are we supposed to identify those people then? I think it would be very inefficient for a law officer to have to call back every time he pulls someone over and figure out, should this person have a gun? Should the person not have a gun? I think you start getting into those illogical processes of would this actually work in the streets and what would that look like? So I think it's an argument that needs to be taken on both sides.
Well, Guy Relford, I mean, this notion of protecting law enforcement, you mentioned earlier in the conversation that it's simply a radio call away. Do you think that's it's really as simple as that? This is really would pose no danger to law enforcement officers in the field?
No, you talk to any trained police officer, they'll tell you they approach every vehicle as if that person or persons in that vehicle are armed. As they approach someone on the street who may be a suspect, they treat them as a danger until they confirm that they're not a danger. Any professional police officer, any trained police officer goes about their job exactly that way, and a licensing system doesn't bear on that one way or the other. So I think, as usual, what we have to do when we're fighting for constitutional carry is we have to spend half our time fighting disinformation on what the bill does and doesn't do. We just heard repeatedly that, well, you know, we can have some limitations on a constitutional right. Right. That's exactly why constitutional carry doesn't apply to all those people who currently wouldn't get a license to carry. Mr. Helmke said, well, we shouldn't just allow anyone to carry a gun anywhere, anytime. Is that what constitutional carry does? Absolutely not. If you wouldn't get a license today, you can't avail yourself of constitutional carry. It has no effect. Talking about any, you know, any gun, anywhere, anytime, has no effect on what guns are lawful or unlawful. It has no effect on where you can carry a gun and where you can't. So all the same limitations that exist today, who can carry a handgun, those remain in place. Where you can carry a gun, those remain in place. The types of guns that are illegal and aren't allowed on the street, those remain in place. The process to buy a gun, acquire a gun, pass the background check to buy a gun, that remains in place. So this ridiculous notion that this would allow anyone to carry a gun anywhere, any place, anytime is complete fiction. But that's what we continually have to fight against, not just setting the facts straight, but fighting against, I think, disinformation put on out on constitutional carry because they can't fall back on more logic and facts. So they create facts that are simply not true.
Paul Helmke, respond to that.
First of all, I was quoting Justice Scalia, and I didn't realize that you and Representative Lucas, Guy, were a disagreement here. Representative Lucas apparently wants none of those limitations that you're willing to accept. So I'm glad that we're continuing to have some limitations on where
baby steps, Paul,
and what kind of a gun you can take places. At least this session, this bill doesn't loosen those. My main concern is that, you know, what is this doing? If this isn't affecting the bad guys, and they'll still be out there. And if this isn't affecting the good guys for all the reasons that you just went through, Guy, what is this doing? This is encouraging people who have a gun at the home, who don't know the responsibilities and risks of taking that gun out in public. If they're going to the ATM, if they're going to the store, if they're scared because of the news stories of the increasing crime in their city, they take their gun out. All of a sudden, we're going to have more loaded guns in public. And that's why, you know, one of the reasons I think we've seen concerns with police shootings over the last few years is because there are more and more and more guns out there. And as we put more guns into more places, I think it puts not only our police officers at risk, it puts the rest of us at risk. The world can't be divided easily into the good guys and the bad guys. All of us have the potential to get drunk, to get high, to get angry, to get depressed, to have road rage. And when we add a loaded gun in public to those situations, I think it puts all the rest of us at risk.
Jim Lucas, you and Guy Relford have both pointed out that this wouldn't change a lot of the requirements in terms of who can and can't possess a gun and buy a gun, et cetera. Would this affect the public's ability to carry a handgun at the state house? Now, under current administrative code and statute, the members of the General Assembly and certain staffers can carry concealed weapons in the state house. The general public cannot.
It would not. That requires a separate piece of legislation, which I have been and will continue to work on for I've been working on it for years and will continue to work on that. That is the people's
house. So as far as you're concerned, everybody should be able to carry at the State House, which I guess puts you at odds with some members of your fellow members of the General Assembly.
I think everybody should be able to exercise their constitutional rights everywhere. You know, what we've gotten away from is holding people accountable for their actions. You know, we all share the same individual rights. We have to respect the right of an individual to protect themselves. And, you know, it's ironic, John, that we just had the 4-year anniversary of the Margaret Stoneman Douglas shooting a school where there was a breakdown on every level of government. You know, to take away a person's ability to defend themselves puts the responsibility of that individual protection on the police department. Well, we have the Democrat Party, which has been pushing the defund the police movement for years now. We've seen cities that have been set on fire, businesses set on fire and looted, as police departments are told to stand by and watch them burn, while the individual citizen who, you know, we have the left is wanting to require a license for those people to be able to defend themselves and their property. But at the Stoneman Douglas shooting, we had a breakdown. We had an armed and trained school resource officer that was waiting outside. He intentionally stood outside as 14 students and 3 staff members were slaughtered inside. Now, the truly disgusting part of that is that there were a group of parents that sued the school because of that action. A federal judge ruled, as has the Supreme Court, that police do not have a duty to protect you. You know, the United States Supreme Court has ruled police do not have a duty to protect the individual. So if the police don't have a duty to protect, as ruled by the Supreme Court, that duty falls upon the individual.
Robin Shackelford, you know, as long as you've been around the State House, certainly as long as I've been around the State House, which is even longer, every session, people who favor some sort of gun control are always on the defensive, or seem to be. There might be a trigger lock bill here or there or something about storing guns safely, but for the most part, it's always pushing further the rights of gun owners. Is that frustrating, or is that just life in Indiana in 2022?
It can be frustrating because I will say the people in my district, they're wanting more safety. They don't want more access to guns and have guns in public places. I remember we had a piece of legislation, I believe it might have been Representative Lucas, to allow for guns at churches if they were holding school service there. So, and when I went back to my pastor, because we have a school at my church, he was like, that sounds like the craziest idea ever. And you got to think about this church is located in a zip code that has a high homicide rate and a high crime rate. Why would we then want people to be able to bring their guns into a school, into a church? So it becomes just very frustrating that we're so focused on the right to carry and not the right to save someone's life. We are looking as we want to make sure that we're protecting someone's life. And as long as I've been here, I've never heard the Democrats shout out defund the police. Now, protesters have, and specifically when the Black Caucus met with protesters this past summer, and they were wanting to defund the police. We came out publicly.
Not this. Said, that's not this issue here, right? That's you're saying.
Yes. Okay,
yeah. Let me just ask Guy Relford. What is permitless carry the Holy Grail, or is this just a step in an ongoing process? Describe a legislative nirvana for you. What does it look like?
Oh gosh.
Real quick, because Paul Helmke's got to have a word in here too. We're almost out of time.
Sure. No, I mean it's a priority. But I think, you know, fighting against bills that get introduced every year that would restrict rights is always going to be a priority as well. So I think Indiana generally has it right, but we need to join the 21 other states that have already passed constitutional carry. So that is a priority.
Paul Helmke, this week we saw, and at the risk of being another topic, we saw the Sandy Hook settlement, $73 million for the survivors and relatives of those who died in 2012 in the shooting, 20 kids and 6 educators. Remington will be paying that amount. Is that, given the gridlock, or not gridlock, but some frustrations to legislate this, is this going to move to the court of, well, the court of courts?
Well, I was happy to see that settlement. Congress has given protection to gun manufacturers and gun distributors. It's the only industry that you can't, it's very almost impossible to have a lawsuit against. Connecticut law allowed them to proceed. I was glad to see that sort of a settlement. People need to be responsible for their actions. We talk so much about gun rights. We never talk about gun risks. We never talk about gun responsibilities enough on panels like this, and we need to be focused on those. And that's the main thing. There's a study that came out just last week. States that pass permitless carry laws suffer a 22% increase in gun homicide within the 3 years after that law's passage, more than double what the country sees overall. You know, how are we doing in Indiana? The more we loosen gun laws, we're seeing more and more gun homicide. It's more and more gun violence. I think people want to see less.
All right. Well, because Jim Lucas is a fan of the First Amendment, I know he won't mind you having the last word. We are out of time. But again, I appreciate your passion and your knowledge on the subject and sharing it with our listeners and viewers today. Again, my guests have been Republican Representative Jim Lucas of Seymour, Democratic Representative Robin Shackelford of Indianapolis, attorney, author, and radio host Guy Relford, and Indiana University professor and longtime gun control advocate, Paul Helmke. Time now for our weekly conversation with Indiana lawmakers analyst Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight, part of Hanna News Service. Ed, we covered a lot of territory during the roundtable. One thing we didn't address is whether this bill is actually going to become law this session. Weigh in on that.
Is this just an exercise or is this for real? Yeah. Last year, the bill died in the Senate when Senator Liz Brown, the chair of the Judiciary Committee, didn't give it a hearing. And the big question is she going to give it a hearing this year or not? We still don't know. And I think it's really up to the Senate Majority Caucus. But there's going to be a lot of pressure applied to senators, in particular by a group called Hoosier Gun Rights, which is probably the closest group to the position that Representative Lucas takes, you know, the no restrictions whatsoever. And they just coincidentally happen to be having a political forum, a workshop on how to elect and unelect legislators next week in northern Indiana.
How influential are these kinds of groups? You know, it used to be that the NRA, legendary, you know, heaven forbid, anywhere in the country, if a lawmaker took a position opposed to NRA, the thinking was, oh, they're going to be targeted and money will be spent helping opponents. Do you see that only increasing or waning?
Well, Hoosier Gun Rights has been very active. They just presented 11,000 petition signatures to the Senate this last week, and they are going to continue to be active. And what's interesting about this is that Liz Brown last year, I think, really failed to give this a hearing because of questions about the database that was in there, the thing that the police requested. But the police, law enforcement, really isn't totally on board or totally against it this year, you know, en masse. You had, for example, in the House, the Hamilton County Sheriff testify for the bill, but you also had the state police, which is led by Doug Carter, who's a former Hamilton County Sheriff, testify against it because it didn't offer enough protections for police and making sure that they had a built-in way to check if somebody could legally carry a bill. And it's not just the law-abiding people that go through the permit process. ISP pointed out that last year they rejected about 5,000 applications for handguns, and about half of them came from convicted felons.
So if it got a hearing, that's no guarantee there'd be a vote, though. The chairman still has great latitude whether to have a vote or allow amendments, et cetera, et cetera. So even the willingness to hear it does not mean this is going to the governor's desk. Is that a fair assessment?
Sure, and we're coming down to crunch time. There's basically only about a week or so left for committee hearings, and there's going to be a lot of pressure on her and on the Senate Majority Caucus on this.
All right. Well, we will be waiting and watching. Ed, thanks as always. Appreciate your insight. From nuclear reactors and rooftop solar panels to wind turbines and car charging stations, next week's Indiana Lawmakers promises to be electric. Hope you can join us. Until next week, take care.